Up next on the program, we welcome back to the show a great friend of ours. He's the author of a number of books, including The Last Days of Letterman, his newest, Fire Walk With Me, Your Laura Disappeared, and Moonlighting, an Oral History. Scott Ryan joins us. Scott, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me. I feel like I need a drink after that last guy, though.
Yeah, well, we can all use that, absolutely. Just to get ready for the turn of the calendar tomorrow. We've got to feel like spring around here.
Right.
Well, when I heard the news about Bruce Willis yesterday, Scott, I thought immediately of you and so reached out, and you were kind enough to make some time for us today. What was your reaction to that news about Bruce?
Well, I was shocked and I wasn't shocked. I've suspected this for a while I was working on the book. You know, I kept getting word that Bruce was going to do the interview and then it would not happen. It would get canceled. And we probably set up like 5 different times where the interview was going to happen. And it didn't feel, I don't know, like it felt personal. There was a personal reason. And because Glenn Gordon Caron, the creator of Moonlighting, he was helping buffer it and they're really close. And I just felt, I wasn't that surprised, but it breaks my heart.
I wonder too, we were talking about it a few weeks ago. He's made a lot of films, many of them straight to video in the last couple of years. And you wonder too, if he knew perhaps what was coming and this was a way to get some things done before he had to stop.
Well, there was an amazing article in the LA Times by Meg James and Amy Kaufman that really breaks down what he's been going through the last couple years. And he's made 22 films in 4 years.
Wow.
But I mean, it's unclear if he really understood that he was making those films. I mean, that is unclear in this article. And I think while people are saying today it must have gotten worse and that's why his family is announcing it, I have a feeling this article was coming out either way, because it does say in the article they've been working on this story for a month. So I have a feeling that's why the announcement happened.
Very interesting there. Well, let's talk about his role in Moonlighting. You wrote about it so eloquently in your book. David Addison was unlike any character we had seen on television before.
Yeah, I mean, he changed television and movies, but more importantly, he changed me. I was so attracted to his brand of humor. And one of the things that was crazy about television back then is television detectives were thought of as these noble, great men, you know, these detectives. Oh, aren't they wonderful? And then David Addison came along and added humor and emotion and feeling to it. And it really did change the way men were portrayed on television from that point forward.
And it was one of the great casting decisions of all time, because not everybody was convinced this was the right idea. And there were those who even thought that nobody will believe Sybil Shepherd could be attracted to this guy.
I know, isn't that hilarious? And, you know, Reuben Carter, who is a very famous casting director, he found him and he got fired from ABC. He got fired for bringing Bruce Willis to them. They said, never say the words Bruce Willis to us again. He's not going to be in this show. But then, as the story goes that I uncovered in the book, there was a female executive at ABC who just said, I don't know, there's something dangerous about him. And, you know, that sort of tilted the scales. And they said when he would walk through the office, all of the women were turning their head because, I mean, there was nobody better looking than Bruce Willis.
Though he had a very different look when he first showed up than what we became accustomed to on the series.
Yes, he did. He was dressed in fatigues. He had an earring. His hair was messed up. But Glenn Gordon Caron could see past that. And he ran out to the street and caught Bruce and said, come back tomorrow, get your hair cut, put a suit on, and let's try this again. And that began one of the probably the most famous casting call ever was for bringing Bruce Willis onto television.
And he became the perfect, is it safe to say, the perfect screen embodiment of what Glenn Gordon Caron maybe wished he could be?
Definitely. I mean, Glenn says that often, you know, that they are similar They both came from the same part of New York, and Bruce, I think, is from New Jersey, but it's that East Coast mentality, and they were about the same age. And that was his alter ego. You know, he got to put these words in Bruce Willis's mouth, and nobody could say them like Bruce Willis.
We're talking with Scott Ryan here on Downtown. It was such a unique and amazing show, so far ahead of its time. And it was a show that really was able to showcase the different skills of Bruce Willis through the years. Was that something that happened as time went on and they realized just how talented this guy was?
Well, part of it was that Glenn just wanted to do something different every week. And so one of the things he wanted to do was get music in there. And very early on, they did what's some consider the most famous episode, which was the black and white episode. Mm-hmm. And they could see that Bruce looked like an old 40s movie star. And so then they wanted to do a boxing episode. And he looked like Sylvester Stallone. And whatever they threw at Bruce, he could do. I mean, when you think of his career with The Sixth Sense, Pulp Fiction, he was Paul Newman's son in Nobody's Fool, which is a movie that if you're missing Bruce today and you want something that maybe you haven't seen in a while, watch Nobody's Fool with Paul Newman and Bruce Willis.
We talked about that. Talked about that yesterday, based on a story written by Richard Russo, who lives here in Maine. One of my favorite Bruce Willis roles, just a great movie.
Yeah, and you know, as a fan of his, I longed for him to take that career path. But, you know, Hollywood puts you in a box, and they really did box him in as just an action star, and that's pretty much where he went. But he could do a lot more.
Well, and even with that, just as he changed our perspective of what a television detective could be, he was not your typical action hero.
No, and actually I was writing a little something about it today, and I was writing about Die Hard, and I'm like, you know what, you don't think about, because now it seems obvious, but the emotion that John McClane feels when he's stepping on that glass and he's pulling glass out of his feet, he's in pain. You know, Clint Eastwood never showed us pain, or John Wayne didn't show us that they hurt. They were these big, strong men, but John McClane was the average guy that was fighting terrorists. And that was new. And it really did change the way action pictures were done.
He also had some wonderful roles in some quirky films late in his career. I loved his work in Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah, I mean, he could do anything. That was one of the things when I would interview Jay Daniel and Glenn Gordon Caron, both the executive producers of Moonlighting, they said he could do anything, whatever you wanted. He could put on a leather jacket and look like a ruffian. He could put on a tuxedo and look like Cary Grant. I mean, that kind of actor is just not found now, because I don't think you get that opportunity to be so many things. But he was on Moonlighting.
Now, do you think, Scott, that the fact that we didn't see much of him in big budget motion pictures in recent years, was that could that have been because of the illness, or was it because Hollywood didn't quite know what to do with him?
I mean, first of all, I don't know any more than anyone else, so I want to throw that out there. But I will say, from what I get from my experience of trying to get to him, I think he's had this longer. Like, I started working on this book in like 2018, 2019. And I actually reached out to him when I was working on my Letterman book, because he was a big guest. And I tried to get people that way. And there was just nothing coming back. So I have a feeling this has been going on for a very long time. And, you know, that's why he hasn't been in those really big films, because he probably couldn't carry it.
We're talking with Scott Ryan here on Downtown. Want to talk a little bit about your new book, Fire Walk With Me, Your Laura Disappeared, another work of passion for you.
Yes, this is about the David Lynch film, Fire Walk With Me. It's 30 years old this year. It came out in 1992, which was a continuation of Twin Peaks, which is one of my favorite all-time shows. And after doing a couple books on TV, I decided, hey, I'm going to follow Bruce Willis and go to films here. You know what I'm saying? I'm moving up. And so this is my first book about a movie. And I got to interview some of the actors, directors, writers, and all of those things like I do in my books. So people who are a fan of David Lynch or Twin Peaks can get a look at this film in a new way.
Well, and speaking of unique, just as Moonlighting created almost its own genre, Twin Peaks did that as well. And then the film, and I think as often as the case, people were worried, is the film going to match up and be anywhere near as good as the series was? And I think in many ways it was every bit as good and offered some unique things that weren't available in the TV show.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a darker look. It's a very dark subject, but David Lynch, that's who he is. I'm actually heading to Chicago next week to spend a week in Chicago at a David Lynch Film Fest where they're showing every single David Lynch film in 35 millimeter. I'm so excited. Oh. I get to interview Charlotte Stewart who was in Eraserhead and Twin Peaks, and Dwayne Dunham, who edited Blue Velvet and Wild at Heart. But most people would know him from a little film called Empire Strikes Back. I mean, he edited that. So I can't believe I'm going to meet someone who basically knows Darth Vader.
Well, that's wonderfully exciting. It's terrific. And, you know, you're living the dream, Scott. You get to talk to these people who are responsible for many of the works of art that you love so much. It doesn't get better than that.
It honestly doesn't. I chase them down and I don't give up and I keep asking and I do it with love. I mean, I cover the things in pulp culture that I feel maybe slip under the cracks a little bit and we need to think about them. And that's the kind of things I like to write about.
Well, I have to tell you that one of my most memorable shows that we've ever done here was last summer when you joined us along with Curtis Armstrong, and we just had a little roundtable talking Moonlighting with Curtis. That was just a terrific opportunity.
It was a dream come true for me. I love Curtis Armstrong so much. I think he is a class act and couldn't have been kinder through the book. He loved the book so much. And that means a lot to me. Like, I want to please him and Glenn and Jay. With my Fire Walk With Me book, I'm not trying to please David Lynch because David Lynch is not reading my book. He's in his own world. But, you know, you want to reach that fan that loves it as much as you do.
Now, in terms of Moonlighting, it's still not available for streaming. We talked about this when you were on last time. It's a tough show to try and find. I wonder if Bruce's retirement might help speed that up and find a way for people to get access to this great show.
And it needs to be out there. And it's all because of music. You know, it's such a sad thing. And it does, you know, it doesn't happen now, because now when a song is in a TV show, man, they get those rights for life. Mm. You know, they have the right to put it right into your brain. There's whatever they invent next. Believe me, they've signed the paperwork to be sure they can use it. But back in the 80s, no one foresaw the home video or certainly streaming.
When you look at Bruce Willis's career, obviously Moonlighting is one of the highlights. From your perspective, Scott, what was his greatest film role?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you couldn't pick Pulp Fiction. I honestly believe Pulp Fiction is maybe the best movie ever made. I'm actually writing a book right now about the movies from the 90s. Oh. That's my next project I'm working on. And I'm picking two films from every year of that decade to focus on. And in 1994, I mean, you're picking Pulp Fiction. You're not, there's nothing to wonder about. It wasn't just the best movie of 94. It was the best movie of the decade and one of the best movies. And Bruce Willis was spectacular in it. And people forget he was huge and he took a chance on Quentin Tarantino, who had only directed one film at that point. So, I mean, that was a really big deal. And I will be writing about that in that book as well.
That sounds wonderful. Well, Scott, we so appreciate you making time for us on short notice to talk about Bruce Willis today. Have a wonderful time at the David Lynch Fest next week. And well, I hope you'll come back. I'm already excited about the book on 90s films. Hope you'll be back with us to talk about that.
Well, anytime I can open for Ken Burns, I'm there.
All right. Thank you so much, Scott. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
That's Scott Ryan with us here on Downtown, author of some terrific books, Moonlighting and Oral History, The Last Days of Letterman, and the new one, Firewalk with Me, Your Laura Disappeared.